is subject to regulation by the Federal Civil Aeronautics Board.
Somebody was going, this was, it was supposed to be pending a study 19 years ago, I guess.
Chairman, we, Rick, have for a number of years, ever since I've been involved in it, that after the ATC to do this study so that we don't, we're not faced with this ridiculous hearing process, so that they have a, what Richard alluded to a little bit earlier, they have a reason for granting or denying new certificates. They know how much transportation does a village of 150 people or a town of 60,000 people need, or what type of transportation does it need. You know, we hear all the time out of the bush that we, you know, when we pull the Twin Otters out of there, we don't have the service anymore. Well, what type of transportation do they need? We've been after them for a number of years. The administration conducted a study, as you people are probably aware of, in Southeast, transportation study. It was done by it wasn't the Department of Transportation then, it was
the planning function.
The study came out with very little usable information in terms of that transportation study. We, when we got that study, we approached the administration and said, hey, look, get the ATC and the DOT together on this. Let's get some valuable information that they both can use. It's not just a piece of paper sitting on a shelf somewhere. This year we've got the new commissioner of the Department of Transportation and the, all three commissioners of the ATC, sent them all down together and said, look, you guys are conducting a study in the northern area. Get together on it. Find out what information you need. We'll be glad to help you any way we can. Any technical expertise we can offer you, we'll offer it to you free of charge. But come up with a transportation study that I believe that chapter, or whatever you call that thing, is alluding to, and something we can use, something that when Rick Halford goes applies for an air tax certificate in some village, he doesn't have to come up with this ridiculous parade of people and say, you know, oh yeah, I need more transportation. Another guy sitting over there, oh no, I don't need any more transportation. It just doesn't make sense. There has to be a systematic basis that we either increase or decrease or change our type of transportation system in the state. And I agree with it. That transportation study should be done. The monies are being spent to do it. My personal evaluation is the administration is not being responsible for the money that they're spending in terms of what we're going to get out of it. I believe at the present time that ATC and DOT are working on it, but they're not working together to my satisfaction, but that doesn't mean they're not working together. That's just my basic premise on the transportation study. I think the industry has been involved in trying to get this transportation study done.
What would the people in Hell Park, the industry, think if they were basically those people that deregulated, were those people that the only area involved in regulation was that they were being required to show that they were available for and providing year-round service and that they had adequate insurance. And if they were able to show that, there'd be no other regulation. The opposite side of that might be that if they're a fly-by-night, if they're coming up here, they may be barred from providing service until they're able to show some permanence or some ability to provide the service. This was not my suggestion. This was a suggestion made to me by a person this morning. And I don't know what I think. That would be interesting to find out what people think.
Carl, would you like to go? Mr.
Chairman, Brady. My name is Carl Brady. I'm President here at Ottawa. We're not concerned with the 5 minute operator. They're going to take care of themselves. We're concerned with the large helicopter companies that own 200 or 300 helicopters that they come up here and bid on the same customers that we jointly have, them in Louisiana and us in Alaska. And they constantly ask us in Alaska to go down and work for them in Louisiana and vice versa if they have good friends. And they're good operators. They can come up here. After they learn the country and the conditions, there, no matter where you go, and flying is pretty much the same. Given stuff here with navigational aids and remoteness in community areas, how it's flying that we've never done before. In fact, most of them are outside of flying from a heliport to a heliport, whether it be on a platform or an airport. And up here, it's much more, requires a lot more technique and more experience and more training, which we all have such programs to take care of. Those are the people who will take their helicopters that may be surplus for the spring and summer and bid on oil company or government project in Alaska and send those people up here because they haven't been here in senior conditions at that pay side wages, perhaps a bonus of 20% or something like that. And then they'll go back in the fall and overhaul their equipment at the outside and try it. If you permit me a couple more minutes, 31 years ago next month, I bought the first helicopter to Alaska, commercial, here in Juneau. And we operated for up until 1959 by bringing more ships up each year than the previous year. And May, and going back in September. And we were paying stateside wages and a little bit of a bonus, both pilots and mechanics, and room and board. And we made money. We started in 1959 trying to stay out there all winter, and we was a real loser. In 1960, the Air Commerce Act passed, and my company was the first one that applied for authority. If you'll note, there was a statement in the Air Commerce Act whereby grandfather rights would be permitted to those people here between the 1st of May and 1st of February and 1st of May or something like that in 1959. That happened to be a period of time when I wasn't here. Some of my good friends, certain air taxi operators, got together and eliminated me from being a grandfather. I was not a resident at the time, and that may have been the reason. Nevertheless, we got our certificate, we appealed the Superior Court, we finally won and got it, and we started expanding. We think the protection of the ATC helped us expand, there's no question about that. We still had a lot of competition within the state, to sum up the question you asked about the carbon mines, we're not worried about those. They're everywhere in every business. They take care of themselves. The industry that hires helicopters normally know who they are and don't consider them to start with. We're concerned with the qualified operators that can come up here for 3 months and go outside. Do all of their work, do all their hiring here in Alaska. and to keep the people pretty much on year-round payroll, as our helicopters do. We have some attrition every fall, but right today I believe we have 150 people on the payroll and don't need 75 of them, because they've been with us for years, and that's the way we keep the people, is give them permanent employment. We do all of our overhaul work here in Alaska. We have seven hangars between the two companies, Livingston and Era, between here and Bidhorse. And we do all of our overhaul work in those hangars, except engines. Turbine engines, which have to be by requirement of manufacturer overhaul by them, somebody that's certified. If we were to be deregulated and had to complete the fire, I think we'll have to. We would then have to set up a maintenance base, do that work in Seattle, somewhere like that. Go back to what we were doing before we were regulated in order to survive. Well, that's what our competition would do. Another point I'd like to make, Mr. Bronson, before I came down here, I checked to see how much money we spent on borough and state business property tax last year. It's over $250,000, and that assessment is made on January 1st.
Hey, that's a question that was asked of me just earlier. What would somebody ask, I don't know who it was, what would happen if that assessment time were moved to July 1 rather than January?
I have been trying to get the borough and the state taxing agency for years to do that, because the people who come up here in the summer and leave are not subject to that tax. That makes them more competitive than us. Another thing is the other tax we pay that nobody pays is I can't think of it right now. But
gross receipts doesn't exist anymore since 2 months ago.
Your personal property tax that you got next to you?
Yes, on equipment, on helicopters. Dead horse is the toughest one for taxing. The state taxes. As you know, you're taxing now, the government is, all oil industry-related equipment that has to do with production or transportation of oil. Now, that includes helicopters working on the oil line or on NPR-4 or offshore Cook Inlet.
You're talking about the oil and gas properties production tax.
Yes, sir. And Era Helicopters is the only company that's paying that tax, because we're the only company at the present time working offshore and on the pipeline with helicopters. I don't buy airplanes. We're paying that tax in addition to the borough taxes. Now, it's true that they credit that back to the individual boroughs where they collect it, but it's still an average of 20 mils on everything we own. Every year. We have never ferried a helicopter out of Anchorage on January 1st to avoid tax. We don't like the tax, but as long as the law says that you're going to be taxed for everything you own, well, we pay it. Some operators have been known to do that, but all the operators that come up and work just in summertime on government contracts, and will, I say, on oil contracts, construction contracts that will be regulated, will get away with that unless the civil laws change. Big thing that we're concerned with is having to, in order to compete, in order to continue to provide service in Yakutat, which is a real loser. It could have been a big winner, but it isn't. But we're still providing that service. In order to continue providing that service, we can't afford to deregulate. But if we are, we've got to stop that service. We'll have to stop it. We can't afford to deregulate. The reason we can afford to do it now is because we have customers in Anchorage who will use us in Anchorage because they need us occasionally in Yakutat in order to provide the service.
Mr. Hawker.
Yeah, thank you. Pull the chair up to the table here.
I don't mind standing. It doesn't bother anybody.
We had the example of outside operators would come up here if they had to maintain a continuous base, and they'd run maybe 10 or 12 helicopters in the summertime. They'd only keep one in the wintertime, and they'd substantially expand and retract their business while still maintaining the base of operations and service on a seasonal basis. Is there anything in the current ATC actions that prohibits that now?
No. Let me give you an example. Firm, the name of Air Logistics in Alaska, a division of offshore logistics of Louisiana. It's primarily an offshore boat service company, got in helicopter business 2 years ago, and they're a good operator. I'm not saying against them, because they've proven they're a good operator. They applied for authority in Alaska through the transfer of the old, I say dormant, Anchorage helicopter certificate. They were granted this certificate over our protest. We appealed to the Supreme Court, the Superior Court. They remanded the commission with another hearing, and they were granted their authority. And in the testimony, I predicted what they would do, and they have done exactly that. They got 9 out of 10 government contracts that were awarded last year at less than half what we did, and almost half what anybody did. Not about right. It was terrible. And they they had bid that contract without regard to the agency, which has no authority over. So there's no problem with them doing that if they want to do it. My point to the commission was that they couldn't make a profit, and they said they could based on 10 years, a full year's utilization, 12 months, based on their average monthly income for the 4 months that they've got a contract. We stated very clearly there would be that kind of available, or that kind of utility in the winter months, and they were granted. There's one of the things I disagree with the Transportation Commission for. They granted the certificate. Every one of those helicopters left last fall. Every one of them. Except one. And they're coming back now. They're a low bidder on several of the contracts that come forth so far this year, including some that aren't government.
That outfit was also the one that was fallen on the government contract. It was the only government contract that we got.
The question and the answer seems to be saying exactly the same thing, that under present circumstances, deregulation, the worry that would happen under deregulation is in fact no worse than the worry that we have right now under the present situation.
Except it would bring all the others in doing the same thing, and that's enough, we think. Now, sure, it's difficult for any of us here, especially myself, who's been a lifelong Republican, and certainly believes in the little interference in our business as possible from the government, to take this position. It is difficult for me to do that. And it appears that we've got an axe to grind. And we have. But we think that deregulation is going to hurt the public and the small operators a lot more than it is us. We'll live with it if it happens. But I wanted to tell you what I think will happen as far as we're concerned, is we will decrease our service to the public, decrease our Alaskan employees. We'll have to in order to compete with the other people. Well, the oil industry, let's face it, the oil industry knows who good operators are. Air Logistics is a good operator. If they'll fly cheaper than we will, they'll hire them. And they can fly cheaper than we are by virtue of the fact that they take their equipment out in the fall. And we don't do that. We have never done it since the Air Commerce Act. And at that time, I think we had 15 helicopters, and we've grown up to a maximum of 75. Between Livingston and Era, a total of 53 or 4. Yes,
sir. Let me ask a question. People are saying the ATC does a good job, not adequately enforcing things. They allow an operator to do what you just said. And you said that no, with deregulation, even more people would do it. It would seem to me that if the ATC is that dysfunctional and non-functional, it would end up being relatively common knowledge. It certainly is just among people in and out of the transportation industry in Alaska, so I assume it would be rather easily obtained information for anybody who wanted to come into the market. Therefore, I don't really know how I could buy the argument then that there would be even more people coming in under that basis. But it's happening now anyway, and people have got to know that happens.
Well, sir, although it is a stumbling block, they have to go through the process and probably end up in Superior Court again, which we dislike as much as they do. The problem with the ATC in this regard is the transfer, the law doesn't provide PC&N for transfers, whereas it does for a new application. Now, I tried, as some of you gentleman here may be, know that last year to get that changed, your question to the APC commission and other people in the legislature to change the same requirement for transfer as from the applicant. Because in the case of Air Logistics purchasing Anchorage helicopters, they had closed their doors and had a guard on the door and had announced to their employees, they dismissed their employees, and they had a termination party for the whole crew that was left, which were very few. So the application, in my opinion, was dormant, not in the authority. The APC said they had no way to grant that authority because they no one could prove it was against the public interest. And that's all that they had to prove. What they were going to do was not against the public interest. Now, they told me to back off because I had made arrangements for some people down here to support some legislation towards that end, and said they'd do it for regulation. Now, they didn't. Now, that's one of the things we're talking about today. They say they're not doing their job, and I agree that to some degree they're not doing their job. But I think it could be made to do their job with the proper legislation. I don't think we need more money either. I think legislation will take care of it.
As I understand it, Fred, what you're saying is that, and Rick also, that with existing laws, existing acts, it can happen. So if you deregulate and it happens, what's the difference?
Oh, we're saying with regard to that particular argument.
Yeah, in this area. Yeah.
Well, first off, that's an extreme case that Carl's talking about now with their law. So it's not the normal situation that's happening under the existing. We predict that it will be situation. In fact, we will have to play the game also, so it'll be personified. Not only will it be people coming from the outside, but we'll have to play the same game. But I would say again, if you can come up with some procedure that puts us in the posture of playing with the same ground rules with everybody else, and still trying to perform the service to the public in Alaska that we do right now, I suspect that, at least I can't speak for the whole industry, but I certainly would.
I don't want to paint a halo around the heads of the officers here. We've all made mistakes, and we all have an interest in this. An accident.
Legislators always tend to be prejudiced in favor of the people who bother to get in touch with us as opposed to people who tell us.
But I've heard this question we've been asked concerning, for example, a foreign corporation owning air taxi operation in Alaska and what that's going on. I would like to say that our company, Rowan Company Incorporated, bought my company 11 years ago and has subsequent to that invested over $25 million in that company. In Alaska, never taken a dime out of it. Never taken a dime out of Alaska. Now, I think that has something to say for at least one corporation that is trying to develop. I have stayed here and lived here the entire time, imagine that company. And I think it's been very good for the state of Alaska. I still have to need some protection from these other operators. What protection we have, we'd like to keep.
What do you think of Mr. Ween's statement that he seems to be making on a personal basis rather than for the company or for the industry? Slightly different, maybe not a great deal, but what you just said. That is, although he is not sure of our ability to find a way of doing it, if we were able to put you on something on the same footing as the company that might be coming up from the lower 48 in the marketplace, at least as far as all the opportunities that government does and doesn't do to you, that would be satisfactory.
Say the record a little bit on that before we go further.
Well, however you say, you can say it over again.
Okay, I'd like to. You asked the question. You suppose that what if? And what I said is that if you could accomplish the same type of situation, I don't know what I mean to say, that we have right now, what we feel we have, and satisfy our concerns that we have right now, perhaps we would look at it more favorably. Right now, I question your ability to do that, the way you're talking.
Let me answer, the way I understood you asked me to concur in what you said earlier.
But, I tried to go in the direction of this idea, suppose there were a requirement that if you're gonna have the benefits of deregulation, we're operating here round, and we can fool around the statute so that the, perhaps the NTC doesn't give you the somewhat ridiculous result they gave you in that one case where they only had one helicopter left and shut down. But, can you see a way there, that we can do that?
I don't know, Mr. Brown, I'll tell you, we'll compete with anybody in the world under the same conditions. Apples for apples, oranges for oranges. If the largest helicopter in the United States, or the smallest, will come up here and build a $500,000 hangar in Juneau, a $500,000 hangar in Yakutat, a $500,000 hangar in Valdez, an $800,000 hangar in Dead Horse, a $1 billion hangar in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and have the center of people we do, they do the overhaul work here, we'll be glad to compete, absolutely happy to. But that isn't what's going to happen with these regulations. We have that investment. Not in favor of what I'm saying to state this, but we have over $10 million in the state of Alaska in fixed facilities. That does not include any tools, parts, or appliances.
I think about here for Ken Eichner, who owns his own business, has an investment in his area in Ketchikan. What are your feelings, Ken?
Well, mine's the same in a smaller scale because, you say, we've got a million point one in the hangar facilities, Ketchikan, Randall, Peterson. And we built it, we're proud of our operation, we're proud of Alaska, and we feel that this is an important thing. And the ATC has enabled us to do that. I don't say that there are other ways it could be better. There are times that the ATC has not performed where we'd like to have it perform. We've hassled that some. I don't like the proceedings in the hearings. I think that they're unfair to the small applicant. They also become a burden on the defendant. I think that the mechanism was intended to set up in a reporting form was to show whether there was need and necessity to show whether there was sufficient business to allow competition to come into those areas. I think that would stabilize a lot. So what I'm saying is that the ATC needs more housekeeping. We know that. And they apparently need more rules so that they can enforce what they have to do. But we have felt that it has enabled us to grow in all states.
Well, I want to go back to the original question that I asked. That is, what would happen if there were deregulation in the helicopter industry? Well, the requirement that people get the benefit of deregulation must be people who provide service on a year-round basis with a base of operations in Alaska. And there are ways of writing that so it doesn't mean a token gesture.
Well, again, I think it would fall on if you could enforce it and make it to do the same function that's happening now. As I say, part of the function now is the fact that some of the bigger operators don't want to get messed up with the legality. When there are ways around it, some of them have accomplished that. But I think that it does keep out a lot of them just because they don't want to get mixed up in a hassle and trying to bootleg their operation in life.
Now, I may have a whole bunch of members of the committee come down on my head because I have not floated this idea past the members of the committee. Sometimes there was a conversation this morning. We'll keep going. We're going a lot longer than we thought we would. We'll go for just a few more minutes. Mr. Halpern.
We kind of heard of something about the way that the transfer can work. And I wonder, in the case of helicopters, the cases that I know of in recent transfers of a few basically unlimited helicopter certificates that are still around, they don't seem to be going to Alaskan, because Alaskan seem to be priced out of the market in transfer of those certificates. It seems to take a level of capital debt in at least the ones that I can think of offhand, that generally, unless it's a pretty big operator, he can't afford to go into it because of the cost of the license. So we've got the structure sitting there now, which means it's pretty difficult to get started for the little guy in any way. And I wonder if there's any way to reduce the value of licenses without compromising the provision for people staying here and providing the service.
Of course, I don't draft. I have called on several occasions to the commissioners and to the legislators that all licenses should be non-transferable. That if I want to sell my assets, I can, but not my license. And I'm agreeable to that. And that whoever buys my company apply and include need necessity. Now, the problem is not that a person has one helicopter, one supercab, and their tax certificate. Very few people that can only afford one supercab and one helicopter, or one helicopter, comes to that person and asks to buy his company and his license that goes with it. It's always a big company that can buy a company. Another example is Rocky Mountain Helicopter, but Buddy Woods very recently, as you know. They registered 13 helicopters, and they've got one or two in the state. They did the same thing they're legitimate. And that's our problem.
That's the example I was thinking.
Okay, that's the problem, is if you buy a small operator, that's one of the reasons for protesting a person that applies to furnish a helicopter in Homer, Alaska, for example. Sure, we're not against that community having helicopter service, but we want that license to be issued non-transferable. Same time, make mine non-transferable. I've got no objection to that. I think they should all be non-transferable.
Just before you go on, if they were non-transferable, would you have any objection to having all the licenses unlimited? If they were limited to the scope, not the range, but the size of operation for which they initially approved PCNH?
What did you just say? I didn't understand what you said. You asked him a question and he agreed to it, but I didn't hear what
you said.
We never concurred with a geographic restriction. We said either there's a need or there isn't. The guy usually can't make a living on a local basis without having some outside.
We have testified each one of those applications. But the guy says, all I want is 100 miles around Talkeetna. That's all I'm asking. My testimony has always been, that's fine. That's all he's asking for now, but he's going to be back within a year and say he's got to have a bigger area because he can't afford to live there. He can't afford to do it. So either give him statewide authority, my preference is don't give him anything, but if you're going to give him anything at all, give him what he can make a living with. Now, in every single case where there's been a limited authority like that, they come back within a year and ask to expand it and usually get it.
Which denies his initial argument that he made before the commission, which said he could make it with what he was applying
to. That's exactly right. They bring in a doctor that says, twice a year I need a helicopter. And they bring in a logger that twice a year he needs a helicopter. And that's not enough to support 3 weeks for the helicopter. But they have granted those authorities.
I know that application too.
One thing that really turned this whole thing up is to keep the agency. Is to do two things. Make certificates non-transferable and make, well, I'll take care of the other thing. I was going to say that if you transfer a certificate, make it through PCNH.
Just a quick word on the value of a certificate. I heard one of the four stories, you know, $175,000 for trucking.
The largest figure we heard in the 3 days of hearing was in excess of $500,000.
Wasn't that a commission?
No.
From an air tax certificate?
Boy, I got my notes in the other room.
I'll tell you, I cannot think of a certificate.
As between surface and air, I think, I don't know what the differentiation was. Maybe the largest figure in 90 days, one of them was $150,000 as to one of the categories,
half of them into the other, and I'll be damned if I remember which is which. I got my notes sitting under a pile of stuff for next week.
I've never heard of anybody paying to save for a certificate, other than calling it goodwill or something like that. I think that the case of the early district in Anchor Shock Office, they did pay about $250,000 for goodwill, which it was not. They can assume it was for the certificate.
Well, we're going to chop it at four, although probably people want to keep talking on an informal basis. Go ahead, Mr. Randall.
But anyway, I'll bring it back down.
Air taxis to do?
No, record.
Oh, yeah, all right.
The record's even worse.
We had the holder of a, in the Senate committee, the holder of a, well, Anchor's Towing and Wrecking testified that he would not sell his certificate for $250,000.
And he also told us by teleconference that he wouldn't tell us how much he bought it for either.
But there was a certificate.
That to me says.
Bad situation.
Well, what it says, somebody ought to be looking at the number of record.
That's exactly.
That's just function of the ATC.
But they all come in and testify that, it's just the unbelievable. That's not what I raised my hand about.
Yeah, Mr. Randall.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They have a dual function in ATC.
I just want to make
sure. We're still in order, trying to be, for the purpose of transparency with this tape recording. Mr. Randall.
I thought maybe Tillian took over.
Yes. I might have made the same observation.
Just an observation. I'm absolutely certain that had all these businesses grown up without regulation, totally in free market, but there'd be some structure now that'd be functioning, and everybody would be very comfortable with it. And if we were trying to impose upon you exactly what you're operating now, you'd be down and argue just exactly the opposite.
Maybe.
No question about it.
Maybe. I don't know that I concur with it, but maybe.
Dick, I think the only guy that's more stubborn than you is me.
That remains yet to be seen.
Well, that's probably a good time to summarize.
I have one other, nobody's asked a question. I'd like to talk just a little bit about the economics of our industry. It's in sad space. Our company is a public record. We can buy our debtors, payments for our own stock at the end of the quarter. Era Helicopters last year, gross between Era and Livingston, $21 million. They had a net profit of $324,000. Now, that's not much of a return on investment or on the risk business. Business is really down. The year before, we made a real good profit. We seem to go back and forth a couple of years before we didn't have a good year. But I mean, the industry is not in good shape. And that's one of our concerns. Deregulated and have a lot of competition for them. Because when you go down and face the board of directors, they're not going to stick with it too long if you don't switch the company. And this is one of our concerns. The protection we now have is better than that.
I further summarize the thought. Mr. Chairman, we do appreciate the opportunity to chat with you on this basis. I think I can speak to the group in saying that, again, we do have some very serious concerns for the action that the authority has taken. We think that they're severe. And we'd like to see some consideration of some other approach. I think that I could safely also say that our association, particularly the major operators, are more than willing to sit down, provide statistics, have further dialogue on how this might be accomplished, and would be very cooperative in your deliberations. In any way we can provide you with additional statistics and data. I think I can speak for our company that our records are open and available, and I think most of them are. There are a lot of records available. Jim Dotson has quite a few that he's compiled. And if there's any way that we can further assist you in your deliberations, we'd be happy to do it. We will be back down here again for our board meeting on
27th, 28th.
27th, 28th.
We're
supposed to be adjourned by then, according to some people.
And we'll see you then.
Oh, you little thing.
I don't know if I believe those some people, though. We'll stand in adjournment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Till probably 8 a.m. Tuesday morning. I wish the members would look at the memorandum I circulated on interim activities, soliciting a response from each of you by middle of next week.